Where does Democratic candidate for governor Mike McCabe stand on Act 10, teacher shortages, and saving our public schools? We're going to find out. Plus, trending news, Matt Damon's mom, and lifetime teaching licenses are bad.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From the Journal Sentinel, the University of Wisconsin System Board of Regents on Friday passed a policy pushed by Republican state lawmakers to punish students on UW campuses who repeatedly disrupt campus speakers with opposing views. So you get in trouble for opposing somebody now?
You get in trouble for opposing people.
So opposing loudly?
Loudly. All right. A little background, right? We know that there are speakers that you disagree with that I disagree with. If I'm in front of a speaker who I disagree with and I'm a student, I have a responsibility to be cordial, to listen, not disrupt, and not become violent.
Right.
Okay. Do we need a law for that is the question.
I don't know if we need a law. I think some kids need to be reminded.
Okay, because this is what, you know, what makes this controversial is the fact that, first of all, we already have the First Amendment.
Free speech.
Free speech. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we don't need a free speech law.
Right.
Because we've got free speech.
Yes.
It's already the law.
Right.
Okay. The other thing, though, about student behavior is if you look at the code of conduct on every college campus, you will see that bad behavior results in suspensions, expulsions, and things like that.
Yes.
And in bad behavior, there's things like violence, disruption, rudeness. Mm-hmm. Those are all covered in student code of conduct handbooks.
Okay.
So now you say, why do we have a law when we have laws?
Right. Why add another one?
Okay. And that's the trick here is because, well, trick or however you want to put it, but I think what actually is going on here is this is tilting to a group of people, largely right-wing, who have lately, whether it's on the Berkeley campus or not, but right-wing speakers have been taking a lot of abuse by, quote, left-wing audiences to the point of having even some riots. And
yes.
So they're saying we need extra protection. Mm-hmm. And so here the regents, this isn't even the government, the regents at the University of Wisconsin says, okay, we're going to provide extra protection. We're going to give you free speech and we're going to punish students for misbehaving. My point to this is the only reason you're doing this is to make those on the right happy. Because the reality is that free speech exists in this country, and bad behavior is not acceptable on campuses.
From NBC News, problem, a massive teacher shortage, solution, the Philippines. This is from Adam Edelman. He says school districts and state governments across the U.S. are combating the worsening teacher shortage crisis that is expected to peak this school year with a new creative policy solutions, and they're not exactly going by the textbook. For its school year that began last month, Clark County School District, which has jurisdiction over nearly all public schools in Las Vegas, faced such a pressing shortage of special education teachers that it brought over 81 teachers from the Philippines. There's a shortage of teachers overall, and there's a crisis when it comes to the number of special education teachers available for hire, said the district chief's recruitment officer, Michael Gentry. That's what he told NBC News. Importing teachers.
Importing teachers because why?
They're cheaper.
Oh, that's not what it said. It said teacher shortage.
Oh, teacher shortage.
Right. We're in a teacher shortage. And see, that's one of the things that we need to clear up first. Okay. Let's get first to this because we don't have a teacher shortage. We've said this on Busted Pencils many of times. We have conditions in the classrooms that are driving teachers away to quit the job. And we have no intake. In fact, in teacher education, fewer and fewer students are becoming teachers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's because of the conditions in the classroom. This idea that we're going to import Filipino teachers to take care of the shortage is really a solution for a problem that was manufactured. The shortage is a manufactured crisis so that we can de-skill and create a low wage. Now, think about this, right? This is nothing against the Filipino teachers, because these are very well-educated, mm-hmm. wonderful teachers. But they make $5,000 to $7,000 in the Philippines.
Right, which is a lot. You know, it's okay.
It's okay, but so you're going to come over here and make roughly whatever, $20,000 to $40,000, mm-hmm. big time. Look, anytime we import labor, though, we have to look at history and say, what happens? We devalue that labor and reduce the wages associated with those that come in to take the jobs over. That's a problem for the entire profession of teaching. This will not alleviate the shortage. This just creates the ability to continue dropping wages and dropping the status of teachers. So importing teachers from the Philippines, we don't have an importation need. What we have a need to do, Bonnie, we need to fix the conditions in the classrooms that are driving teachers away.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Importing teachers from the Philippines. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom has to say about that.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
When I heard this, I mean, it was hard to even take it in, because this is such a typical kind of superficial response to a really serious problem. And instead of looking at the real underlying reasons why we have a teacher shortage in the United States, it's increasing, it's extreme in some states, and it's only going to continue. Why do we have it is the question.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you can go find some teachers from the Philippines who want to come to the U.S. because they're getting paid a whole lot more here than there.
Right. Let's be honest, right? We don't have anything about the teachers from the Philippines and saying they're not qualified. From all standards, it looks like these are extremely qualified people.
Oh, yeah, they're qualified.
But it's an exploitation part, though, too, that I don't like.
How do you see it as exploitation?
Well, I guess maybe not. I mean, it's a better life to come over here. But, you know, the other thing, though, is that it also sets up, I think it ends up setting up in the long term, the teachers from the Philippines as scapegoats for lowering pay in the whole teacher market, while their wages are much better by coming here and teaching in the United States as compared to teaching in the Philippines. The ultimate long-term economic effect on teaching salaries in the U.S. could be the reduction of teaching salaries, and then therefore these, quote, teachers that were imported taking the blame.
I think that that's very possible, and it's also that it masks a deeper problem.
Yeah, and that's the real issue you were going at.
Teachers in the United States are leaving the profession because they're miserable and they're demoralized. And why? What happened? I mean, testing started in 2001 with No Child Left Behind, and people got duped. The whole American public duped into thinking that you could evaluate the quality of education with test scores.
Mm-hmm.
Then once that happened, and it had widespread acceptance, I'm sorry to say, and still does, people still think that's how you judge good education. Then once you have people buy that idea, then you can evaluate teachers with test scores, and you can blame teachers for low test scores, and you can fail schools and close schools and replace teachers with unqualified people, mm-hmm. and computers and on and on. But the whole testing thing is what started it. But it's led down this path of misery for teachers, where the creativity and joy is gone from the job. They have to, you know, teach to standards and get test scores up to a certain level, or they're under threat or they're penalized.
Well, I was going to tell you, because you framed those as these can, but it actually has turned into these things are happening. We are judging teachers by test scores. We are judging schools. We are.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so that long-term cumulative effect, you know, whether you mm-hmm. want to start it at No Child Left Behind or wherever, is that now, you know, the profession, if there's anything left that's professional about it, because we know we don't want teachers actually acting like professionals. First of all, if you talk to somebody who's been in it for 20 years, they will tell you that it is not the same profession they started in. And they just say, I can't take it. We've pointed this out before, but it's worth repeating. We have more first-year teachers in the field than any other group. Now, as you would take that as evidence, and I would take that as evidence, is that we've got a staying problem in the fact that our teachers aren't staying.
Staying. And that leads you to the really important question we have to ask, which is, how do you build a stable and sustainable teaching force. And once you ask that, then you can start to really unveil the deeper issues.
But when somebody puts to me the solution, as this is called, the solution to the teacher shortage is to import people, whether it be from the Philippines, they've mm-hmm. done it here in Madison, from Spain, is that actually they're not really concerned with the real answer to the question that you and I are asking, which is what's the problem? What are the conditions in the classroom? The conditions in the classroom are just as they're supposed to be. They're working just fine. They're driving professional teachers out. I will maintain that that's been the goal all along.
I think it's one of the goals.
I know. People
one
sit there and go, Tim, you really think? I mean, that sounds awfully conspiratorial. I said, well, okay. You know, you got to look at it. For me, I take a 1983 approach from Nation at Risk, and I take it all the way up to here. Mm-hmm. I put everything together and from the social studies historian background, and I come to a conclusion and go, this whole mess is a purposeful mess that has public education as its target. If public education is its target, professional teaching and professional teachers are also part of the biggest target, because when it comes to, quote, the money, when we look at the most expensive part of K-12 education, it is in wages and benefits for teachers.
It's in labor.
Yeah.
Highest cost.
So if we can reduce labor costs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I agree. And for ed reformers, you know, whose goal, and I don't think every single corporate ed reformer's goal is to dismantle public education, but it's the goal of many, then you don't want a professional teaching force. You want a teaching force you can control and you can pay little money to and that doesn't have a union and doesn't advocate.
And therefore, you go to the Philippines.
And you go to the Philippines and you divide and conquer.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
He's a farmer, and he's the self-proclaimed blue jean candidate for governor of Wisconsin. Democrat Mike McCabe is here. Mike, are you ready to bust some pencils?
Absolutely.
Because that's what we do here.
We can do it.
If I'm a public education supporter, why am I voting for Mike McCabe?
Because we're really trying to support two education systems right now in Wisconsin at the elementary and secondary level. And we're not doing a good job of supporting one, much less trying to sustain two. So one of the things that I've come out and said is that we should end taxpayer-subsidized private schooling in Wisconsin. We should end the voucher program in Wisconsin because we need to focus on sustaining and really getting one system of public education right. And we're not. We're spreading our resources so thin. That program's 26 years old. It hasn't delivered the promised results. It hasn't boosted student achievement as was promised. It hasn't driven school improvement as they claimed it would. And so for me, there's just a basic rule of government that if a program works, you keep it and you fund it. If a program doesn't work, you get rid of it. By that standard, we should end taxpayer-subsidized private schooling. And we should make sure that the schools that we have in communities all across the state are properly funded. And that's another place where we've really fallen short in Wisconsin. We've seen huge cuts in assistance to our public schools. A lot of money's been siphoned away for mm-hmm. the voucher schools. And that's part of the problem. But, you know, now that we've got a budget that puts a little bit back, but it's like we've taken four steps back on education, and now the people who are in charge at the Capitol want us to forget that by saying, hey, look, we're taking a step forward.
Right. So you went to question three right away, vouchers or no vouchers?
And no vouchers.
Okay, so no vouchers. We're clear on that. Talking about that, though, so you moved into this idea of that we're, you know, giving money back, and as, you know, we're going to be here. We're pro-public school, and I've said it a couple of times, you know, you cut over the last so many years and then come back and offer more. Did we really get funding put back in our public schools in Wisconsin?
No, like I said, it's like we've taken four steps back and now maybe a half step forward. And the people who are running things at the Capitol want us to forget all the steps back. They want us to forget the gouging of public school funding. And part of the problem is just budget priorities. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is just that state lawmakers have not been willing to make education the as high a priority as it deserves to be. But then part of it is that we've got this other system of education that's working on a parallel track. We've got these taxpayer subsidized private schooling programs going, and that's siphoning a lot of money away from public schools as well. And so that hits our schools extremely hard as well.
So the vouchers, though, so we're back at it. So let's take them on, because you came at it right away, and I won't disagree. But you know, you say 26 years, so let's go 30 years tax funded private school choice in Milwaukee, in Racine, different places. You say unsuccessful.
Well, voucher students aren't doing any better than their public school counterparts, and by some measures, they're actually doing worse. I remember when this program was created. I was around the Capitol at that time. And the people who got up said, this is only going to be for Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. We're only going to do this in Milwaukee.
Okay.
But this is going to boost student achievement.
Sure.
And it's going to create competition in our school system, and that will drive school improvement.
Right. Two things will create improvement, both that and the competition.
Correct.
Okay. And so 30 years later...
We haven't seen student achievement go up, and we haven't seen school improvement driven. And was that
the purpose?
No, I don't. I don't think that was the true purpose.
Okay.
Of this, I think that was all camouflaged or hidden. But that's nevertheless what they sold the public. Okay, they told us was going to happen, and it hasn't happened. And we don't have these students doing any better than their public school counterparts. It hasn't been a magical solution for student achievement. It hasn't driven school improvement. But their response to the program's failure over the course of several decades now has not been to curtail the program. It's been to expand the program. Right. They decided, hey, we got to take this to Racine.
Choice for everybody.
And now it's been expanded statewide. And Now they want to make even more people who are even wealthier eligible for these vouchers. So they keep expanding the scope of the program, even though the program
doesn't succeed. Wait. I thought this was for only people that were struggling with money. You just said wealthy people.
Well, they said at the beginning that this was only going to be for low-income families, and it was only going to be in Milwaukee.
Okay.
But of course, it's been expanded beyond Milwaukee to the point where it's been expanded statewide. And then they keep raising the income level where you can be eligible for these vouchers. And this budget further increases the income level where people would be eligible for these vouchers. So again, it's people who are more and more well-to-do who now can take advantage of the program. Again, I think what we've got here...
Take advantage or fleece the program, which I mean...
Yeah, you know, and I it's sold as a choice program.
Right.
But the thing is that it didn't create any choice that didn't already exist.
Okay.
Because one of the interesting things about this program is that the vast majority of people who are taking advantage of vouchers were already privately schooling their kids. They already had made the decision to go to private schools. The only thing that's changed is now all of us taxpayers have to subsidize that decision of theirs. They were in private schools before. They are in private schools now with their kids, except we're all paying the bill.
Yeah, so they're off script again, because there was my other question. I was going to ask you, how many students are actually in the choice program that are actually benefiting, quote, from this, and as opposed to the number of students who are already in private schools that have now just used this to subsidize their private education.
The vast majority already were attending private schools.
Right. So
it's not even close to half. I mean, okay. It's the solid majority of kids were already in private schools. They remain in private schools, except now we're paying their bill for them.
So vouchers and choice were first sold as competition to drive school improvement for those that can't afford to get out of, quote, failing schools. And now we've just come to the end. And guess what? None of this has happened.
None of it's worked. And again, to me, what frustrates me is you go up to the Capitol and Republicans want to further expand the program and make even more people eligible. They want to double down on a strategy that clearly hasn't worked for more than a quarter of a century. And on the Democratic side, what you hear is, well, maybe we should try to limit its growth, or maybe we should hold them a little bit more accountable, do a little bit more testing. No, if a program fails over this sustained period of time, you end it.
Okay, and, I was going to say, what is a McCabe administration going to offer?
I will immediately propose in the first budget I would offer the ending of taxpayer-subsidized private schooling and repurposing that money for a far more constructive purpose, strengthening our schools that all people attend. And by the way, one of the reasons I feel so strongly about this is because I'm farm-raised. I grew up on a dairy farm in Clark County. I think this program has been a particularly raw deal for small rural communities. In rural communities, there aren't very many private and parochial schools out there. They've seen their public schools, which are pillars of their community, really hubs of community activity, they've seen them bled by this program. They've seen money siphoned away from the schools they do have, so that people in the suburbs or in a city can have the taxpayers fund private schooling for their children. And I tell you, we've got an awful lot of rural schools out there that are teetering on the brink.
Right.
They are at risk of going the way of the dinosaur in some of these communities. And when you lose a local school in a rural community, that's a death sentence for that small town.
And I've said this many times on this show, on different interviews, that's the key, particularly in the rural areas, of getting somebody to recognize that. But yet, first of all, okay, you're the first Democrat who's absolutely said, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to do this. We're going to end it. We're going to repurpose funding for this. And then coming on to looking at rural schools, talking about and saying the danger that rural schools face under this. How do you get the voters, though, at rural schools who, let's be honest, don't vote for Democrats?
But neither party has had candidates out there talking about this with people. You know, if neither party is willing to stand up and say, you know, this program is a raw deal for rural communities, it's a program that should be ended, and it would be good for rural schools and rural communities if we abolished the program and used the funding for a far more constructive purpose, like making sure your local school can actually stay open mm-hmm. and function. And how people understand how important that is. If you live in the city, not everybody goes to the high school football game or the basketball game or the school play. You go to a small town like where I grew up, the whole town shows up. These are incredibly important hubs of community activity.
When I lived in small town Pennsylvania, the kindergarten Halloween parade, okay, more people showed up for that than for, you know.
Big deal.
But it's so big. But it's a very tough question, though, because I said how the voter, though, in those districts tends to not make the connection between the public school and the politics.
But that's because they've heard Republicans say this is a great program that's going to make education so much better for your kids. And we should expand it statewide. We should give all of you the opportunity to take advantage of this. And the other side has said, well, not so fast. Let's go slower on this. And maybe let's try to have more accountability. And it's been such a technocratic response. Mm-hmm. No, I think you've got to go out to people and say, this is a threat to your community because you run the risk of losing something that is incredibly precious to your community. That local hub of activity, that local school. I was just up in Clark County, which votes solidly Republican today. When I was young, it voted for Democrats. It's solidly Republican today. I was in Dorchester, a little town not too far from the farm where I grew up. They are right now in a fight to try to save their local elementary school.
Is it a problem? And I've heard this as a possible solution. Just think about this. If we had on our real estate tax bill, showing where that money went. So how much of your tax bill locally went to the choice program, the charter program? Would that make a difference in helping people understand that the money from their local public school, where it's going?
It might, you know, and it's not a bad idea.
Okay.
But again, I still think this is about making sure that people are having the conversation in small towns and big cities alike. And that requires parties to take a stand on things like this. And one of my frustrations is that we've really had one party that we've got one party rule right now in Wisconsin and really across the country, but that party has sold people a bill of goods and the other party has been awfully timid, awfully reluctant to speak out against that bill of goods that the public has been sold.
No,
that's
shortage,
stop.
Right? No shortage of criticism of Democrats here. In fact, maybe more criticism of Democrats, because I know where Walker's coming from. I know where Voss is coming from. Not that we don't hit them whenever we can, because we love to, and they're easy targets. But to be honest, it's the Democrats that are the most frustrating, because of when we're talking about public school, as you said, like a timidity, you know, mm-hmm. and or you know, we'll do it not as hard. Or a little less choice, but right. but never truly coming at it and saying, "Whoa, wait
that's,
a minute."
And that's why I'm running for governor.
So that okay,
because I'm frustrated at the lack of leadership at the Capitol, and it's and really we've got both major parties failing us right now. The two major parties are very different. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people who says you can't tell the difference between right. the two. They're very different, but they're both failing us in their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think the way the Democrats have been failing us is just by failing to take clear stands and be absolutely crystal clear with the public about what Wisconsin has the potential to be and how we reach that potential and what we have to stop doing that we've been doing for decades and what we now need to do more of to for this state to become what it has the ability to be.
Okay, so
that it's real clear. It's been clear what the Democrats are against. It's not at all clear what the Democrats are for.
Okay.
And then on issues like, and I don't call it the choice program, by the way. I refuse. It is taxpayer subsidized private schooling. That's what this is.
Then
truth in advertising.
And at Busted Pencils, we like to tell the truth. In fact, that's what we say. When you bust a pencil, Mike, you're telling the truth.
Truth
man.
In advertising. And on that topic, the Democrats have been timid. It hasn't even been clear what they're against in that case.
Time to drop the big one, Act 10. Where do you stand on it, Mike?
I think Act 10 should be repealed, and I will only put one condition on it.
Okay.
I think it should be repealed, but it should be done as part of a package that benefits all workers in every sector of the economy. It should be combined with something like a significant increase in the minimum wage to turn that wage into a true living wage. The reason I say that is because what's happened to teachers across the state and public employees in general is they've been turned into political piñatas, and they have been thrashed and pummeled. And what we've seen is divide and conquer politics. We've seen one group of workers in one sector of the economy pitted against other groups of workers in other sectors. And the truth is 9 out of 10 workers don't have union representation. And we've got some pretty cynical politicians who then go to those people who don't have union representation and say, well, doesn't it tick you off that your taxes go to pay for them to have things that you don't even have? And it literally is putting working people at each other's throats. And we've got to be smart enough to steer clear of that.
Okay.
So to me, Act 10's effects are clear. It has been a very unhealthy, and I think it's an unsustainable policy. And you look at teacher morale. Just look at teachers and the morale in our schools. There's been great harm done and great damage. And then the reality is we've got more people leaving the teaching profession early than we've had in a very long time, if at any time. And we've got fewer young people entering teacher training to become part of the profession. We're set up for chronic teacher shortages, and we're already experiencing them in parts of the state. And we're set up for really horrible teacher shortages. How is that a recipe for anything but disaster for our schools? And the climate that has been created is one that is basically chasing people away from the teaching profession. That is disastrous. So it should be repealed, okay. Unquestionably. I just think that it's important to do this in a way that prevents different groups of workers in different sectors of the economy from being put at each other's throats for another year or 4 years or 10 years. That is such a destructive thing that's been done in our society. And so I really think that what government does needs to be done for the whole of society, and what government does for workers needs to be done for all workers in every sector of the economy. And that's really important for people in a profession like teaching. Because otherwise they're going to continue to be piñatas. They're going to continue to be demonized politically. I don't see how that leads anywhere good.
I don't either. My goodness. Well, so back, talk about script reading. Man, I swear you took my questions out of my pocket for me because
I apologize for messing up your order of questioning.
Yeah, but you're leading right into them though. Okay, teacher shortage and Act 10 and the connection. I've said I think it's wrong to call it a shortage. I think we need to call it an exodus because every time we call it a shortage, we are actually saying that we have some type of labor solution instead of asking the question, which you pointed out so vividly, the amount of teachers leaving the field and the number of teachers or potential people coming into the field. That is not an issue that needs to be addressed by creating, and I'll ask you about this in a different way, but so what do you think about exodus as opposed to shortage?
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay.
I think you're right. So I'm willing to say I stand corrected. Because what we have is a teacher exodus. We've got more people wanting to leave early, just saying, I've had enough. I got to get out of here.
Okay.
And then we've got fewer people saying, I want to get into that profession. They're not entering into teacher training. So we don't have new people wanting to join the ranks. And you're right. That's a teacher exodus. And it's very, very dangerous for the future of education.
So then let's go for solutions on this teacher exodus. What has now come across the budget is license curtailment and or almost the wiping away of any type of teacher license to, quote, create and open new pipelines into the profession. Where would the McCabe administration stand on these lax regulations for teacher licensing?
What you described in the budget won't work. Okay. It won't end the teacher exodus. We've got to, and what has been done in recent years, both to teachers and to education broadly, is what is causing this exodus. And so what we have to do is restore value to the teaching profession, and we've got to fight for that profession and place real value on that profession. The kinds of steps that have been taken, the one you just described in terms of teacher licensing, Act 10 before that, all of that has devalued the teaching profession and led people to say, you know what, I don't think they really care about the work we do, and so maybe I don't want to do this work anymore.
But, I mean, we're being told from DPI, which, quote, I know is supposed to be non-political or non-biased, but we're being told from DPI that, look, we have to loosen regulations. We have to create these alternative pipelines into teaching. It's a shortage, Tim. You need to understand that reducing regulations, and they call it regulations, as opposed to when I say, no, you mean lowering standards for people who are going to be with our children.
We should not lower standards for those who are going to teach our children. And the reality is that this is if anybody wants to call it a shortage, and I did before, it's a manufactured shortage. It isn't something that is just naturally occurring and that can be addressed by something like loosening standards for teacher licensing.
Right.
It's a manufactured shortage where people are being driven away from the profession. Well, we have to reverse policies that are doing the driving of people away from this profession. And restore respect and restore honor to that profession that has been tarnished, that has been lost because of these policies.
So, what about student loan forgiveness for people that are going into teaching?
Well, I think in general, what I will say is that our goal as a state has to be debt-free education and job training, and that goes for all academic areas. We need to make sure that higher education is as affordable for our kids and grandkids as it was for their parents and grandparents. I wasn't looking for anything for free. I worked my way through college. I had part-time jobs during the school year, and I worked pea harvests during the summer to save up enough money. I got out of school with $770 in debt. I'm 57 years old, so I graduated from college in 1982.
You've paid that off, right?
$770 in debt wasn't difficult to pay off. And now the average student comes out with $30,000 in debt. I run into people with $50,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt. They're buried under a mountain of debt.
Yeah, let me tell you, don't go back to graduate school.
Exactly.
It's a real problem.
And to me, I wasn't asking for anything for free, but I really appreciated the commitment that the state of Wisconsin made to education affordability. Tuition was so low. It was in the hundreds of dollars when I went to college. And that cost was so low that I could work my way through college and get out basically debt-free. Well, we have to make that same commitment today. And yes, for those who are already buried under the mountain of debt, we've got to look at ways to relieve that burden. And I am open to debt forgiveness, but overall, I think the goal for our state has to be debt-free education
and I was
job
really,
training.
Well, I was really looking at particularly teachers. If we're going to, first of all, and I like what you've said about restoring the climate that actually allows people to stay in the job. But once they're there then, and if we do need to get more people into the field, the idea that there's some type of incentive to become a teacher, because the new incentive in this budget and is this American Board Certification for Teacher Excellency, which is you can go online, you can click the major you want to teach, and $2,100 in 10 months and no student teaching later, you are now recognized in the state of Wisconsin as a teacher.
Bad move, and it won't work.
Well, so how then? So that, but see, $2,100, that's cheap, Mike. That's affordable.
But it's the wrong route to get to affordability. We need the strategy that Wisconsin had for decades, if not generations. And I benefited from that. And it pains me that my son won't be in a position to benefit from that, and his kids won't be in a position to benefit from that. But I did. And so, again, I think we have to make a commitment as a state to making education as affordable for our kids and grandkids as it was for their parents and grandparents. That has got to be our vision and our commitment as a state. And, you know, and what these measures that are being thrown around as answers to that teacher exodus isn't going to get us to the place where they promise we
can have a conversation around it. Let's be honest. Why would it? If people are leaving because of how bad it is, why would creating a pipeline of people back into a really crappy place be any better? Other than, and this for me is what I would say, and the Busted Pencil listener would hopefully agree, is this is actually a way, though, to create a short-term labor market where we actually get rid of professional teachers as a goal. Because if you keep people moving through teaching very rapidly, then you can reduce wages at the same time. And so, you know, people are like, oh, Tim, that sounds awfully conspiratorial. I said, is it conspiratorial or am I following the evidence? Because if you create that type of a disastrous conditions where people are exiting, and now the people coming in are coming in at a rate, and they're going to leave very rapidly. Think of the, you know, because the longer you stay in teaching, you got to pay the teachers more, which is a good thing, because the more teachers stay in the field, the better it is for kids. And we have all the research that proves that. But if you don't want to actually pay teachers, what's the first thing you do? Get them out quickly.
And as we were discussing before, with taxpayer-subsidized private schooling, there was the public sales job. There was the sales pitch that was made, why this would be good for Wisconsin. But I think there was then the submerged motivation. And I think there's a submerged motivation with this, too. I think you're on the mark. It's just the wrong direction for Wisconsin to head. We need to make a commitment as a state to the education of our kids. We need highly trained professionals to do that work. Man, it even pains me to see what passes for school lunches nowadays. And it was all done in the name of cost saving.
Ketchup's a vegetable.
And we, you know, it is shameful what we feed our kids at school. And as a result, most kids who can afford it don't eat school lunch.
Right.
And so in so many ways, we've just, our commitment to educating our children has been diminished. It's evaporating. That is a disastrous move for our state. And, you know, back to the debt topic, even if you just want to look at this from a purely economic standpoint, How is it good for our economy to have people buried under a mountain of student debt? When are they ever going to be able to make a down payment on a house? When are they going to be able to buy a car? Now, what is the effect of that reality on car dealers and auto manufacturers and realtors and home builders? You know, getting a solution to that student debt crisis has amazing potential ripple effects for our economy. It can do our economy a world of good. So we're really slitting our own throat here as a state by because of the things that we're doing in terms of backing away from our traditional commitment to education in Wisconsin. This is, you know, using farm terminology, we're eating our seed corn here. You know what you are supposed to plant and eventually harvest. We're eating that seed, and that's any farmer knows that is not a smart thing to do.
I feel like this is the first Busted Pencils interview where we can say farm to listener. You know, like they do farm to table. You know, this is directly from the farm to the listener here with Mike McKay. Mike, it's been a great afternoon. Anything else public education advocates out there need to hear, people that support public education that we didn't cover that you would like to just remind people about?
No, I just want to really thank you for being willing to do a show that focuses on education, and it's a privilege for me to be on the show and be able to talk about these things. But these are conversations that just have to be had in every nook and cranny of the state. We need to have these conversations in places where people aren't being challenged to think about this. And I don't blame people for maybe not voting on these issues when they are never engaged in a conversation on these issues.
So where do I go if I'm interested?
Well, governorbluejeans.com is the campaign website, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all of that stuff on social media. But yeah, you know, people can start by just going to governorbluejeans.com.
Governorbluejeans.com. That's an easy one to remember. So Democratic candidate for Governor Mike McCabe, thanks for busting pencils, man.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
A lifetime teaching license. Hey, stupid cliche alert. Be careful what you wish for. Wisconsin has a new budget. Finally, we can get down to the continued further disruption of the teaching profession. Yes, it's now official. $2,100, 10 months, and no student teaching gets you a license to teach children in Wisconsin. It's the teacher shortage solution, I've been told. Never mind that the most comprehensive research available says 90% of teacher openings are being caused by teachers leaving the profession. Oh, wait, sorry, that's old news. We're talking about lifetime licenses. So, in addition to fast-track certification in Wisconsin, you now will get the opportunity to earn a lifetime license after teaching for 3 years. I know what your first reaction is. That's so cool. No more burdensome renewal process. No more disconnected requirements in order to maintain a teaching license. No more crappy regulations that have nothing to do with my teaching. Hey, I know there's a lot of truth in that previous statement, but do teachers really think a lifetime license was included in a Walker budget that would actually help teachers? Seriously? The Act 10 Walker? This is the guy who maligned teachers for having a job with health care and retirement benefits. Why would he all of a sudden want to do something positive for teachers? Look, he hasn't. A lifetime license is just the newest way to promote a lifetime of low wages and diminished professional status. But Tim, back in the day, I had a lifetime license and continued my education, and I was rewarded for professional development and advanced degrees. Yeah, I know, but back in the day, teachers had collective bargaining and a strong union that made sure that the profession was treated as such. The union advocated and received the supports needed to financially help teachers continue their education and make sure that each level of continued education was also rewarded. Under the new lifetime license, the only requirement to maintain it is simply apply. How good is that for kids, and how good is that for the profession? Schools that have been stripped of cash over the last 6 years, that don't have the financial ability to reward and compensate teachers can now offer a lifetime license instead. Therefore, teachers, those of you that have been stripped of collective bargaining, you are now going to simply morph into low-paid labor. That's it, a lifetime license with no continued education, professional development requirements, and no need for districts to compensate teachers for advanced degrees is simply a license to work as a low-wage laborer for the rest of your life. Yes, the old renewal process was painful, burdensome, and in need of a major overhaul. However, that work was supposed to be done with teachers, teacher educators, schools, and communities together. Politicians that have been actively dismantling our public schools and the profession of teaching had no business entering the world of teacher licensing. Lifetime license, lifetime low-wage labor. You decide.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Each week we ask experts from all around the education world a very important question, first brought to the forefront by frequent guest of this show, Alfie Cohn. She is an internationally recognized scholar, artist, poet, activist, and public intellectual. She holds the Levy Presidential Endowed Chair in Ethics and Moral Leadership in the School of Education at Loyola Marymount University and is also Professor Emerita of Educational Policy, Organization, and Leadership at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Dr. Antonio Darder, what are the schools our children deserve?
Well, I think for me it has to do with, is it an educational process that respects the dignity and humanity of our children? Is it an educational process that creates a truly participatory sense of learning? Is it an educational process that cultivates and nourishes the imagination, the curiosity of our children? Does it allow children to ask and question? Is it responsive to their needs? Is it responsive to their questions? Are there teachers that identify with the children? Are there teachers that, that feel an incredible stakes for the intellectual growth and development of those children, for their capacity, for their evolution as, cultural workers and cultural citizens of the world? That's to me what the kind of education I believe our children deserve.
Time to pay tribute to social activist and historian Howard Zinn. Here is your moment of Zen.
Our problem is that people are obedient while the jails are full of petty thieves. The grand thieves are running the country. That's our problem.
My thanks to Wisconsin Democratic candidate for Governor Mike McCabe, Matt Damon's mom, and Antonio Dader. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.